If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here in Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined as always by my quarantine partner in crime. It's Finn Martin. I mean, we're quarantined from different places, but Finn, how are you?
Really good, Kenny, but not as good as you. It's official. You're just about to move house. Are we allowed to discuss this on the air?
Sure, yeah, we can. And we're moving. I'm moving house next month, so it's going to be finally getting away from this the woman next door who. We had one bad night about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, at the Royal Rumble 2019, where we were very loud, and I accepted, and I apologised because she complained the next day. And then at this year's Royal Rumble, I was very... You were there, Finn.
I made sure
the ruckus was much less loud than it was the year before. I managed to calm it down a lot. And then I thought, right, okay, so it's fine. And I even went outside at points to listen from outside to see if it sounded too loud. And on the Monday, she had sent an email to my letting agent saying, I would just like to make an official noise complaint on Saturday evening and Sunday evening. There were lots of doors banging between the hours of 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. It's like, sorry, love, when you need the toilet, I can't control how loud the living room door is. You know, it is what it is. But now, I could understand if she was like the model neighbour. But she gets up at 8 in the fucking bastard morning and sings opera. There's somebody who's moved in next door in her block. Like, she's the ground floor. Somebody's moved in the top floor and they've got like a little tan retriever dog who's very nice, very easygoing. She shouted at them for even daring to have the dog pee on the garden. It's a dog. Dogs pee in the garden, you know, get over it. So, but she's going to be very happy that I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I'll be very happy to never see her again.
So I hear, Kenny, that the street party's planned.
Oh, I can't wait. I did toy with the idea. Sometimes this is the battle that you have inside your head. Sometimes you just want to write a note telling someone to fuck off, but you don't do it. Because you just know that it doesn't get you anywhere. And you know that the payoff is not worth what you do. You know, like, you're not gonna get anything out of it. So instead, you just have to kind of internally flip the person off and hope that makes you a more zen person.
Exactly. I mean, sweet revenge, where does that get anyone?
Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. But yes, I'll be moving at the end of next month. Looking forward to it. And... That'll also mean that the new flat that I'm in, the internet should hopefully be a little bit better, and I don't need to always podcast from the exact same part of the room as I have to do now, so yeah.
I mean, basically, podcasts are going to be much improved.
That's the idea, or they're just going to stay the same, but hopefully they don't get worse. That's the only thing we need to hope for. They can't get any worse than this, can they, me and you?
Well, I don't think. No, I mean, we've hit rock bottom, but the great thing about hitting rock bottom is there's only one way to go, and that's up.
As Yaz and the Plastic Population used to say, the only way is up.
Oh, hey, that song was, I think that was kind of before your time, that, Kenny.
Well, no, when I was about four, which would have been 1989, God, kill me now, but when I was four, I remember the first two records that my mum had that I used to always play was Yaz and the Plastic Population, the only way is up. So maybe the message I was gay was available back then. And also The Proclaimers, 500 Miles. That was my two songs I used to listen to when I was like four. So yeah, Yaz, check it out on YouTube.
Yes.
Anyway, indeed. How have you been, Finn?
I've been all right. Yeah. I'm just been starting my WrestleTalk stuff. I'm on the magazine. I didn't do anything for last issue, but I'm doing an article on the TV reports and other things for the next issue of WrestleTalk magazine. So I've been on with that. I'm going to be on that rest of the week. So yeah, I've been watching a lot of wrestling over the last week or so, Kenny, and doing quite a bit of writing as well. So, yeah, pretty much up to date. Raring to go for today's podcast.
Raring to go. We should mention very quickly that Drew Gulak has re-signed with WWE, and he will be back on this Friday's SmackDown. So, you know, nothing to report here. He must have got his raise. He's happy. He's back. Yeah. And he's good to go.
He rolled the dice. You know, and good for him. I mean, there's a guy that, when we talked about this at length, was it last week or the week before?
Last week.
And we went in to speculate as to his reasons for doing this, and it appears to have been successful for him, and good for him. That's what I say. I mean, this is a company that could afford to give him a raise for reasons everyone already knows, and it appears that it has done, has recognised that he is valuable to this company, which I think most of us would agree that he is. And yeah, good for him. You know, there's a guy who, you know, took a gamble and it paid off. And you know what? Had they not given him a raise and he'd gone elsewhere, I still... Right.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him that he rolled the dice on himself and it paid off.
I think I'm probably going to use these same tactics, Kenny, when I want a pay rise.
Don't you dare.
I don't think now is the time.
No, not during a pandemic, Finn. know your time.
Drew Gulak can do it. But I mean, let's face it, inside the ropes, doing all right, but have the cash reserves of a small country, unlike WWE.
Yeah, no, I mean, we don't even have the cash reserves of a small city or small area of the city. But the other thing I want to ask you about was, so it's been reported by PW Insider that Matt Riddle is going to be SmackDown bound in the near future. He's got the blow-off match with Timothy Thatcher in a steel cage with Kurt Angle as the referee tomorrow night, as we record this on Tuesday. And then he's going to be going to SmackDown. So what do you think about, I mean, obviously the Royal Rumble performance or booking of him left a lot to be desired, but what do you make of him going to SmackDown? Do you think he's got a shot at making it there? Do you think Vince is going to get him? Talk me through Matt Riddle's prospects on SmackDown.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is the right move for him. I enjoyed his team with Pete Dunne, but obviously Pete can't fly into the States right now. So, I mean, it seems to me like, you know, it's a shame really that the Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle team did not last longer. But you know, that was impossible for reasons I don't need to explain. And this just seems like the right move for him now. He, to me, absolutely has everything it takes to be a star on SmackDown. I think he's tremendous. I know there have been times in the past when you haven't been a fan of his. I think he's really smooth in the ring. I mean, everything just seems so natural. It's like he does everything on instinct. It's like he's not even trying. It almost feels like, when you're watching Matt Riddle, that it's, if you know what I mean, it's like everything he does is like what you would do naturally. You know, some matches you watch them, you think, well, why has that person done that? Oh, yes, because that's the way the match has been laid out and it doesn't really make any sense. With Matt Riddle, everything just flows so naturally and smoothly. He's got his own style on the mic, his own character. It's not dissimilar from Rob Van Dam's old character, the actually not that dissimilar from his character now, other than there's no Katie by his side. I think he's somebody that is very, there's no one like him on SmackDown. I think he's somebody that can really slot into almost any program and make it work. I mean, I could actually see him coming in and his first program being with King Corbin. That, I think, would be a good start for him. And I think he would obviously win that. But that's Corbin's role now, is to really put people over. And I think something like that would work really well for him, be a good introduction. I think Corbin would play off very well from someone like Matt Riddle. And I think the matches would be decent as well, at least if not good or even very exciting. Because I think, you know, as much flack as we give Corbin, I mean, he is a good in-ring performer. He's just not very charismatic. And he's not a main eventer, but I mean, he's perfectly capable of having proficient mid-card matches with the right opponent, as we have seen many times previously. He's also perfectly capable of having extremely tedious matches, as we have seen many times previously with Elias. But with Matt Riddle, I really feel like Riddle could bring Corbin up a step or two on the ladder, really make him seem like a more interesting performer. So I'm all for it, Kenny. What do you think? What's your
opinion? I mean, I like Matt Riddle a lot more. It's not that I didn't like him, I didn't get it before, and I feel like he did a really good job in NXT, especially with the Broserweights team, of really showing his personality and really showing... He kind of reminds me in some ways, just for me, I'm not saying that there's a direct comparison, but like when Daniel Bryan came to WWE, I was kind of like, like he's a really good wrestler, but like why do I care about him? I don't really know what I have to care about. And then when he finally started doing the big character stuff with Kane, Team Hell No, and all that kind of stuff, I really got behind him. And with Matt Riddle, I knew coming in, I'd seen his matches before, he's a great wrestler, but like it didn't click for me. But I felt like the more he went on in NXT, the better it was. And then by the time he got to the Broserweights team with Pete Dunne, I was like, okay, nah, man, now he's got the character part down as well. So I think he's got a good shot on SmackDown. There's a lot of people he could face. You know, you could see him doing something with Sheamus. You could see him doing something with Bryan, with AJ Styles. There's loads and loads of people that he could feud with on SmackDown. And I think Corbin would be a good one just to kind of, you know, short and sweet, maybe do it at the July paper, at Backlash or the next one. One and done, get it out of the way, get Riddle to kind of erase those Royal Rumble memories that people have, and then set him up with something better for SummerSlam.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, this team with Timothy Thatcher, who was there as a replacement for Pete Dunne. Thatcher, I just find him so tedious. This feud has just been, they've just sprinted through it, presumably because the call has been made to bring him up to the main roster. I can't say I'm really looking forward to this cage fight they're having on NXT this week. I mean, I guess with Kurt Angle's involvement, it would be slightly more interesting. One presumes that Riddle will lose if he's moving on to another brand. I mean, although what Thatcher's really going to gain from a win over Riddle, I mean, I just can't really see Thatcher making it in this company. I think it's a really, it's not, I wouldn't say it's a bold move, because I remember writing something earlier in the year for, in an installment of What's Going Down, saying that, and suggesting that Matt Riddle could be somebody who, under normal circumstances, would be an ideal candidate to be brought up after WrestleMania. So I endorsed that earlier in the year. And I thought he was somebody that, you know, been in NXT, done about all he can there. I mean, there's obviously more things he could do, but I don't think he's really going to do anything any better than he already has. I don't think he's going to become a bigger star in NXT if he stays there than he would be on the main, you know, SmackDown, the main roster. So it just seems like the timing is right for him to leave now and see what he can do on SmackDown. There's a lot of mountains for him to climb there. And I'm sure there's a lot of people on that brand who are looking forward, you know, to working with him in the ring and sparring with him on the mic.
Well, yeah, we'll see, I guess, after Wednesday. Maybe he could show up as soon as Friday. I think they've already taped SmackDown, so maybe he's already on that show. We'll see. Speaking of SmackDown, let's get into SmackDown from this past Friday. There was some notable stuff coming at the show. We started the show with a dirt sheet with Miz and Morrison and with Braun Strowman. They were showing off, like, reject Firefly Funhouse puppets. There was one called... Shiloh the Lonely Laundry Lass and Dookie the Diaper Boy.
Lots of fart noises and fart jokes.
I mean, it was grim. And then
Vince thought it was funny. No matter what you think.
I'm sure he did. And that led to Braun Strowman beating Miz in an untitled match, which then led to Morrison challenging Strowman to defend the Universal title against him and the Miz in a handicap match at the Backlash pay-per-view. There's a lot to break down about why this is not very good. So I don't know where we start. I mean, first of all, you would think that you'd want it to be a triple threat match because Miz and Morrison would both want the title.
Yeah.
Secondly, where's The Fiend? Thirdly, the humour, in inverted commas, just wasn't really there. This was not very good. Did this work for you more than it worked for me?
It did not work. It was a total flop. And they did the dirt sheet. They mocked Otis. Then started knocking Strowman, who turned up. Miz was panic stricken. After Morrison suggested that Miz face Strowman in a singles match. You know, Miz didn't want the match. Braun accepted the challenge that was made by Morrison for Miz. The match happened. Strowman won with the running power slam fairly easily. I mean, it was really, at no point did it look like Miz was going to win the match. It was almost like a comedy match, really, the ease with which Strowman won. And then afterwards, Morrison took the mic and said, you know, you beat us in a tag match, you've beaten The Miz in a singles match, but there's no way you can beat us both in a handicap match. And then Braun immediately accepted the challenge, which is, you know, just hacks back to the match in which he lost the Intercontinental title, doesn't it, Kenny?
Sadly, it does.
You know, I mean, it's just like he didn't fare very well in the last time he had a handicap match with line. That was when Sami Zayn became champ. So I'm hoping they bring that up in the storyline. I mean, it wasn't mentioned as far as I can recall on. Don't you remember?
It was, they didn't bring it up.
So, I mean, that's the only way that they can, you know, potentially add some tension to this. It's just such a throwaway match that was, it's like, well, what are we going to do? You know, it's as if they like came up with a load of ideas, went through them all and said, right, what's the worst idea we've got? And this was the worst idea. And they went with that because they thought, well, what the hell? We can feed the audience pretty much anything at the moment. You know, what else?
They'll take anything.
You know, what else are they going to watch in lockdown? Just garbage, really. Where's Bray Wyatt? Where's The Fiend? I mean, I would imagine that he will make an appearance at Backlash. It doesn't seem that he's going to before then, because that would only cloud the issue. So what would be the point?
I mean, you know, I guess to be fair to them, you know, we do say, you know, The Fiend isn't necessarily someone you need to use all the time. So, and I don't in theory have a problem with him not being around, because, you know, they can figure that in. But it's just the Morrison Miz thing just felt very thrown together. And, you know, I think there's more interesting story in sort of Miz and Morrison. And maybe they'll bring this up next week and they're telling a story with it. But Miz and Morrison should both want to be champions, so it should be a triple threat. But it wasn't very good. Luckily, though, there was some other good stuff on. There was some good stuff on SmackDown. We saw more Intercontinental title tournaments action. We saw AJ Styles beating Nakamura and Jeff Hardy beating Sheamus.
Yeah.
Which means the semifinals are now going to be Elias versus AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy versus Daniel Bryan. I thought they did a really good job on the show, actually, of making the Intercontinental title feel prestigious and making it feel like this is a prize that, you know, Daniel Bryan's already in the semifinals waiting to see who he's going to face. Hardy and Sheamus are battling over it. AJ and Nakamura, rematch from WrestleMania, they're trying to vie to get the title. So I felt like they did a good job on this show of making that title feel worthwhile. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, in stark contrast to the tournament on NXT for the vacant Cruiserweight title, which is just, I'm just losing the will to live. I mean, it's just going on and on. It's no wonder the ratings are abysmal. I mean, we've got another match this week, haven't we, between, who is it?
Jake Maverick, Jake Atlas, and Kushida. Yeah.
Kushida and Jake Atlas.
I mean, it's very simple, Finn, because you've got Group A, Group B, Group C. Whoever's won the most matches in Group A, Group B, Group C goes through. And then of the person who's the fourth, they go into a playoff match. And whoever wins that gets the fourth place in the semi-final to go and become the interim Cruiserweight champion, who then may face Jordan Devlin to find out who the undisputed Cruiserweight champion is. I mean, that's all very straightforward to me.
Yeah, I'm not really complaining about it being complicated, although now you've spelled it out, it sort of is by wrestling standards. It's just the fact that it's just gone on and on and on. And we've got like this another match this week between Kushida Maverick and Jake Atlas. I mean, I'm not interested at all in that match and don't care who wins this. It's just dragging on and on. I cannot. And there's so few genuine stars in this tournament. There's so few performers that I think people really view as somebody's. It just feels like it's filled with sort of mediocre players that don't really matter, and just feels like a 205 live tournament, doesn't it? It might as well be taking place on 205 live as NXT. I always feel like NXT is above 205 live. It just feels like I'm watching that, which I guess in essence I am. But I mean, as far as the IC title tournament went, Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura, I thought the match was very well done. The problem is Nakamura is now such a non-entity that it's really hard to root for him, believe that he's going to win any match over anyone. So that sort of devalued Styles versus Nakamura, but it was a very proficient match. Very technical aspects were all, you know, first class and everything. But who really thought that Nakamura was going to win? Did you think Nakamura was going to win, Kenny?
Oh, God, no. We should also mention that AJ Styles has now officially been drafted to SmackDown. So he's now on the blue brand, which makes sense because, you know, it's a fresh coat of paint for him.
Well, it is. That's right. Yeah. I mean, when did that happen? Or are we just not meant to think about that?
They announced it on social media, I think. I'm pretty sure they announced that he's been traded for someone that will be announced at a later date, or names that will be announced at a later date.
All right, so they're just making it up as they go along.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? So, and the other match was Shane, which they've been building towards, you know, they've been building this feud up for many weeks now. So, I mean, that was a grudge match. Hardy pinned Sheamus. I enjoyed that. Obviously, a very different match from Styles versus Nakamura, but I thought that was fairly well done as well. So, and it just feels rushing through this. They're getting it over with. They're not, you know, dragging this out for week on end so people are losing interest and the will to live, you know. So it was two of the biggest matches on SmackDown. And I'm looking forward to the semi-finals, which I think they're going to be this Friday, or at least one of them will be, right?
Yeah, definitely one of them. I don't know if they're both this Friday or they're spacing out, but yeah, it should be good.
The final will be taking place at Backlash. Have they announced that yet?
I don't think they've announced that specifically what happened. Maybe they did, but I mean, I assume that's when the final is.
Yeah, you would think maybe one semi-final this Friday and then the other semi-final Friday after. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the other big matches on SmackDown was Bayley and Charlotte Flair in a non-title match, champion versus champion. I liked it, and I like the continuing story of Sasha and Bayley. The only thing for me that kind of held this back was they're both heels, so it's very difficult to get behind one of them. But Bayley and Flair have always worked fairly well together. I think that the two heel thing kind of made it difficult to invest in it.
I didn't. I mean, Bayley backstage said to Sasha, I don't want you in my corner for this match because people don't think that I can beat Charlotte without Sasha. And Sasha's like, you know, she's like recoiling. She had to be convinced by Bayley that this was the right decision. I'm sure most people were expecting Sasha to make an appearance at ringside during the match, but she did not. And Bayley ended up pinning Charlotte with her arm around the middle. She cheated, of course. But then again, as you say, both of them were heels and both of them were putting the feet on the ropes. There was a lot of skullduggery going on here. So it just seemed like one out healing the other heel. So, I mean, that was, you know, it's all fair in a situation like this, in the rules and the attitudes of the two players. The fact that one of them cheated was, you know, only the same as what the other one would have done had she been able to cheat more effectively first. I mean, I thought it was a really good match. Tight as a Swiss watch. So I thought it was well done.
That's a great saying.
I thought it was very well together. I like the heel versus heel stuff. And they brought up the brand to brand invitational, we should just mention, four times a year can switch brands. Now, who's going to keep up with this, Kenny? Who's gonna compile this? Who's gonna make sure there's no violation of this rule? It's not gonna happen, is it?
No, I mean, it's like I don't really, stuff like this just isn't for me. So like, it's fine. Like, you know, it's like the rankings in AEW. I don't really pay attention to like who's ranked where or how many times this has happened. Like, it's just not really how I consume wrestling. But you know, maybe for some people they will like keeping an eye on it, and maybe there'll be a time where like, you know, Raw and SmackDown have used up. Because what are the rules again? I've already forgotten the rules.
It's what they stated was it's the brand invitational, which means that a performer from one brand can go to the other brand or another brand four times a year. Technically, you know, Charlotte Flair could go to the other brand four times, and then Bayley could go to the other brand four times. So if they wanted to, Charlotte could have eight matches, couldn't they, technically? As I understand it.
My favourite thing about this is I like to imagine, so let's use Charlotte, right, as an example. And she has been to the other brand four times. They've used all their options up. And then Vince says one day, I want Charlotte on SmackDown for this angle. People go, oh, Vince, we can't. Why not? Well, she's used up the four times. Oh, nobody will remember that. Bring her back. It's fine. What were we supposed to say in commentary? Doesn't matter.
No one will remember because no one's going to keep score. And as you just said, I mean, the vast majority of people probably weren't even paying attention, probably couldn't make sense out of it, probably didn't care, probably had no faith at all that it would be enforced. And they're absolutely right. It won't be.
The other big thing on SmackDown, though, we had the grudge match of Otis and Mandy Rose against Dolph Ziggler and Sonya Deville in the mixed tag. I really wish this had been in front of a crowd because I really do enjoy the story. But I thought this was fun. In Dolph and Sonya got the win, of course, in the end, which I think was the right move because, you know, to keep it going, that's probably the right way to go. Sonya Deville continues to be tremendous in this role. She's really good. It's given Ziggler a bit of a new lease of life. So I enjoyed it. What did you make of the mix tag?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I noticed that Mandy Rose was wearing double denim. Did you notice that, Kenny?
Very 2020 of her. Maybe she just saw Lana from Raw in 2016 with Dolph Ziggler and the Fish and thought, I'll just wear double denim as well.
Hey, it's making a comeback. So, I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, Sonya hit quite a convincing knee to the back of Mandy Rose's head and then scored the pin. I like the finish. Otis kind of seemed like a bit of an also-ran here. He seemed like some person of no real importance, which was, I think, in contrast to how he was positioned on the previous, where he was, intimating that he was going to cash in the briefcase on Braun Strowman. He just felt like a bit of a nobody here, but I guess the story really is more about Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. I mean, when you think about it, and that's what's quite interesting about this feud, is the women actually are the stars of this feud, aren't they?
Yeah, they're propping up the guys.
Yeah, Otis and Dolph Ziggler, they were just like, yeah, they were the extras. They were the bit players. They were just there making up the numbers. I think that's a huge step forward for womankind in WWE. So, I mean, yeah, really well done. So, yeah, absolute decision because you've got to figure this feud has got, I would think they'll have a match, singles match, a Backlash, and maybe they'll keep it going and Extreme Rules and do a stipulation match there. I don't know whether they can spin it out for that long, but I think I'd like to see them do that.
Yeah, why not? I don't know if they could stretch it to SummerSlam, but yeah, they could probably stretch to Extreme Rules. Yeah. But yeah, I thought SmackDown was a good show this week, and I had enough stuff on. Even though the Braun and Miz Morrison stuff wasn't for me, I thought there was enough stuff on it to keep things going.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a lively show. It kept moving. Comment about Edge and Randy Orton, which is officially the greatest wrestling match ever. I mean, this all just feels like a rib, doesn't it? Like a piss take. You know, out of us, and probably Edge and Randy Orton as well. So it's all very weird, you know, that they've already told us it's the greatest match ever, and it hasn't happened yet. There's something very odd about this.
So we'll go into Raw in just a bit, but before we talk about Raw, I did want to bring up a little bit about Double or Nothing, AEW's pay-per-view this past weekend. Lots of stuff on the show. We saw Hikaru Shida became the new women's champion. Jon Moxley retained his AEW title, but in the casino ladder match, we did see the debut of Brian Cage, who's now going to be with Taz. What did you make of Brian Cage being the mystery entrant, winning the ladder match, and being attached to Taz?
Well, he's been rumored to be AEW bound ever since he left Impact in January, hasn't he?
Yeah.
There was a report flying around, I think it was a week after he'd left Impact Wrestling, that he was going to debut in AEW like imminently, and I think his wife actually went on Twitter and denied that, but obviously he's arrived now. He was the mystery, wasn't he, Kenny Brian Cage?
Yeah, the thing is I saw people saying, his wife denied it in January. Well, of course she's gonna deny it because if he's signed and you want to keep it a secret, you have to deny it, right? So
Heard
Tony Khan on the post Double or Nothing media scrum. He said that the pairing with Brian Cage and Taz is what he'd kind of envisioned for him all along, and he had an injury which he was going to be able to rehab and come back from in May, which meant he could be figured into the Double or Nothing plans. What do you think of Taz as a? Because we've seen Taz as a commentator for years. Yeah. We've seen him in TNA. We've seen him in AEW as well. What do you think of the idea of bringing him into a kind of more managerial role? Is that something that you think Taz could be good at?
Well, I mean, Brian Cage, there's not much finesse on the mic, so I do understand the decision. I mean, Brian Cage is, in the right environment, is a really good performer. At times, he's a bit clumsy out there. Anyone who's seen him would probably reach the conclusion that he would probably be better if he was a little bit smaller. But, you know, we're not allowed to say anything more about that here.
It's a very easy way to do that, Finn.
There probably is, yeah. That's it. Just stop eating all those, you know, all those chicken steaks.
You know what I do is see if you stop eating at 8 o'clock at night and you start eating again at noon the next day.
That's it.
It'll fall off.
Weight will just drop off. You know all about that, Kenny, don't you?
Yeah, you'll look like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia in no time.
All right. I mean, in this lockdown, you were just saying before we came on the air that you're now describing yourself as a meme podcasting machine.
Well, you got to look. I think you go through the stages, don't you? You're so bored, and then you get so anxious, and then you want to go out. That's a whole thing. But anyway, back to Brian Cage.
Yeah, Brian Cage. So, I mean, I think it was the right choice having him go over here. I mean, there was some clumsy moments. This really felt second rate. And like some pretty scary moments as well. Some of the stunts he did, you're like, well, why are you doing that? Some of it did look a bit dodgy. I understand why Brian Cage won. He's obviously a guy that they feel they can possibly make champion. And if not champion, he's certainly somebody who can be a contender for a Jon Moxley, somebody who can headline against all sorts of people. I mean, he is a good in-ring performer against the right opponent. He's actually really good. As far as Taz as his manager, yeah, I do get it. As I say, Cage, he's not that smooth on the mic. Taz is certainly a much better talker than he is. I mean, I'm no great fan of Taz. I just find him annoying and boring. But I mean, he may be somebody that can make Cage more saleable and marketable and help him in these big matches. We're just going to have to wait and see on that one, Kenny. I'm not excited about it, to be honest with you. I do understand why the decision has been made, because Taz is a better speaker than Brian Cage is. So, and if they do have Cage as a top guy, which I'm sure they do, I'm sure that's what they, you know, the direction of travel that they see for him, then perhaps they think that they need Taz to do for him. So I absolutely do understand why these two have been put together as a unit. So we'll see how it goes.
One of the big talking points of the show was Cody and Lance Archer with Jake Roberts in Lance's corner, and then Mike Tyson to award the belt. I didn't feel that this match really lived up to the expectations that I'd hoped it was going to be. Usually Cody matches on pay-per-view do deliver, so this was it was fine, but it just didn't feel as epic as I think that people had hoped it would be. But what did you make of the match, the decision for Cody to be TNT champion, and of course the performance of Iron Mike Tyson?
Well, you know, I mischievously took a screenshot of Mike doing the big yawn when they had the camera on him, and he yawned, and it was funny. The announcers, of course, they got the camera off him as quick as possible. Of course, the announcers didn't comment on his reaction. But to be fair, Mike was enthusiastic about the vast majority of the match. He did look like he was having a good time. When he had to run Jake Roberts off, that was really funny. He got on the ramp, took his T-shirt off, and Jake Roberts backed off. So that was just towards the finish of the match. Obviously, Jake Roberts was in Lance Archer's corner and Arn Anderson was in Cody's corner. I don't know whether it really enhanced the match, Mike Tyson being there. I think Mike did have a good time. You know, he's a lifelong fan. I mean, he really is. He enjoys pro wrestling. People know that. As far as the match went, I just didn't think it was very exciting. I just felt Cody's offense looked kind of feeble. I just felt didn't really mesh that well. Lance Archer did the rope walk, and he did it for the second time. And then Arn Anderson had to shove him off the rope. I thought the timing of that looked really amateurish. And then the pinfall with Cody holding him down for the pin kind of long after the three count had been recorded. awakened memories, Kenny, of Triple H versus Booker T at WrestleMania 19. just didn't really see why Lance Archer, who came in like this formidable powerhouse, you know, unstoppable force, and it just seemed to me like he, all that was just extinguished here. There was, to me, he should have gone over. He should have won this match. And if Cody didn't want to put him over in the final, then someone else should have been in the final. To me, you bring Lance Archer in, you put him over, you make him look like a star, you make him look like, you know, a force to be reckoned with, and then you lose passion. I thought this greatly weakened him. I'm not saying it's over for him, but I mean, this was kind of like a, you know, a Walter at Survivor's moment for me. I mean, it wasn't quite as bad as that, but I mean, it was, it's still, I just thought, wow, you know what? This guy that we really thought was going to be a player in this company has been beaten like that in a match that really wasn't that good, with offense that really wasn't that convincing. Yeah, very disappointed by that. And same with Dustin Rhodes and Sean Spears. I mean, you know, at least Lance Archer, the match lasted a long time. Sean Spears, very swiftly by Dustin Rhodes, wasn't it?
Yeah, he did. I think the problem for me with the Lance Archer and Cody Rhodes match is that I think Cody kind of needed a win because he had, you know, lost to MJF, lost to Jericho. He's lost a lot of stuff. But then it's, you don't want to get into this WWE problem where you build a big match and then, you know, what do you do as an outcome? What do you do as a finish? And I think, you know, I guess their attempt at protecting Lance Archer was the two crossroads. I think it's recoverable if he does something on this week's Dynamite. But then, you know, Mike Tyson's announced this week's Dynamite, so I'm hoping that doesn't mean that Lance Archer's going to have to get punched out by Mike Tyson. I don't think that's what's going to happen. But, yeah, so it was a difficult one because what do you do? Do you have Cody lose again? Do you have Archer beat him? Archer beating him probably was the better call, but yeah. You know, they didn't go for it. And then the main event obviously was Stadium Stampede with the Inner Circle against the Elite. This was 35 minutes of absolutely bonkers pro wrestling. I think Jim Cornette probably had an aneurysm somewhere. when he finally watched, well, I know he did, but what did you think of the Stadium Stampede?
Yeah, it was a barrel of laughs, wasn't it? I mean, it was really funny. We had when Paige arriving on the horse and using the buggy, and then Paige and Kenny Omega in the bar, and there was Matt Hardy in the swimming pool with Santana and Ortiz, and you know, Sammy Guevara, I think, was the unsung. I mean, I think everyone really was great here. You can't really say that there's any person the unsung hero, because I think everyone did really well here. I mean, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Chris Jericho was just hamming it up to the point of ludicrous. But I mean, that's what this match called for. You know, that's what this match was all about. It wasn't meant to be taken seriously. And it's quite funny at the kind of trying to sort of explain what it was, and almost was sort of slightly ashamed to admit that, oh, well, it was a wrestling match, nothing like what we've seen before here in AEW. Well, of course it wasn't. You know, rejoice in this, relish in it, you know, celebrate, you know, the absurdity of this it was all about. And I think the announcing really at times kind of let it down, because these guys, particularly Jim Ross, takes himself far too seriously. And this was a fun match. I mean, this was all about pure entertainment.
Well, so if you're Chris Jericho, and you know, Chris Jericho is what, 49 years old? And, yeah, you know, for him to have the run in the next kind of, say, 5 years, say he's around for five more years, he has to adapt to the way things are now and what people are talking about. And that's what he's done. You know, like him or not, that's what he's been able to do. So I think that JR could kind of take a little bit from Jericho here and just kind of embracing it a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, JR's done silly stuff in the past. I mean, I don't know why he takes himself so seriously now. I remember the famous segment in 2001 when Austin was in the ring with all the alliance and came out in the milk truck. Remember that segment?
Yeah, I think
someone actually referred to it. Did they sing Wind Beneath My Wings?
Yes, they did.
I bet middle of number. And I mean, I'd forgotten all about that. I mean, that segment was so funny. And then that was the night that Kurt Angle came out on the milk truck, didn't he? And then sprayed it with milk.
Yeah.
And I remember Jim Ross had so much fun with that. And he was having, and it was, the commentary was absolutely spot on. It was exactly what was required for that ridiculous segment. And I think really JR should have, dipped into 2001 JR and said, well, you know what, I need to don that hat tonight. You know, I need to just have some fun with it. But yeah, overall, yeah, it was a barrel of laughs. And there was just so many elements of it. And everyone was just having a good time. And I have read some criticism of it, but the vast majority of people, from what I've read, really enjoyed it and just wished it for what it was, which was this ludicrously over-the-top match. I mean, I think the ending was kind of silly with Kenny Omega doing, was it the one angel off like a balcony, wasn't it? Onto,
yeah.
Obviously, it was a big crash mat down below. You know, when they showed that on replay, it kind of looked a bit naff. It reminded me of the Triple H Undertaker match at WrestleMania 17. Remember when, I think, did he do a choke slam? I think Undertaker did a choke slam. It looked amazing on the first camera shot, and then he showed it from another camera shot, and you could see the crash mat, and it kind of exposed it for what it was. But, you know, and that, this was sort of similar to that, but it didn't really matter, and that's just me nitpicking. Christ, people know what I'm like. But, I mean, yeah, overall, what a laugh. And yeah, everyone, all involved, deserve a hearty round of applause for delivering such a, you know, fun-packed match.
And yeah, I was thinking about, I think part of what really hurt the Cody Lance Archer match as well is not having that crowd. Because if you look at the previous Cody matches in AEW, the crowd and the atmosphere were really what set those matches apart from being so good. And I think that that's going to be something where, you know, maybe with Cody, it's going to struggle a little bit because it has been all based on atmosphere up to this point, so we'll see.
You've got to create your own atmosphere at the moment. But mind you, in saying that, Kenny, I mean, AEW had quite a few people at ringside. Vicky Guerrero was there, and quite a few people were cheering them on. So it's not like a lot of the matches that we'd seen, I mean, prior to Raw this week, where we'll talk about in a moment, they've now got NXT talent in the audience, which is something that, you know, you've been suggesting for many weeks. I mean, AEW had a lot of people there at ringside, not thousands, but they had quite a few people there at ringside providing an atmosphere for this match. So, I mean, if that were to in the Performance Center prior to this Monday, I think they would have struggled even more.
Yeah, 100%. Well, speaking of which, we are now getting crowds of NXT and PC talent who are standing behind a Perspex glass to cheer on Raw and SmackDown. So it started last night, sort of added a lot to the show.
Yes.
And let's go through some of Raw. So we had Andrade defending the US title against Apollo Crews, and Apollo Crews won the US Championship in an 8.5-minute match. He finished them off with the standing shooting star press. No, he did a moonsault and then a shooting star press and got the win. And he cut a promo later on, sort of talking about his win. Did this feel like a big moment for Apollo Crews? Did it feel hollow? Was it in between? How did it feel for you when you saw him finally? Sort of, because this is his first title in WWE, right?
Yeah. They did make a point of stressing that. They emphasised that. I mean, what a reversal of fortune for Apollo Crews. Just a few weeks ago, I was calling for his dismissal. I said, fire that man, sack him. You know, so it's like all those people on Twitter calling for someone else to be sacked. So, I mean, it was just like, it was just, to me, it did feel, I was really surprised by the result. I did not see this coming. I think Apollo Crews was quite moved by this title win. It's hard for me to believe that he's going to be champion for very long. I would think he's going to drop the title back to either Andrade or perhaps Angel Garza maybe at Backlash. But I mean, it's still a big moment for Apollo Crews, you know, a guy who had qualified Money in the Bank and was then removed from the match due to a storyline injury, you know, and he must have been thinking, you know, what's my future in this company? You know, what do they really think of me that they would, you know, elevate my hopes only to cruelly dash them. So I think this was probably bigger for Apollo Crews than it was for anyone else. I don't know whether it's really going to mean a whole lot in the long run, but it was a nice moment for him. And I thought it was the fact that we had talent in there providing an atmosphere in the crowd made this feel bigger than a lot of other matches we've seen recently. So, I mean, it was greatly enhanced by that, I think, the fact that we had an atmosphere in the performance center. So the atmosphere combined with what I thought was you know, a pretty good match and this shock outcome, I thought this was news, this match. And I was kind of amazed by it, Kenny, to be honest with you. And the fact they allowed him this promo time afterwards to really cut this very heartfelt sort of acknowledgement of how much this meant to him. I was really impressed. I was kind of moved myself, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. It was only when he won the title where I kind of remembered that this is somebody who is doing this, that has done this for so many years, and he's been in the main roster for 4 years, and all this kind of stuff. So that moment would be so big for him, and then the promo was really heartfelt. So I am really pleased for him. I don't know long term what this means for him, but I hope that he takes the time that he's getting this push to really show us more as a character than we've seen before. Because he's got it in the ring in spades, but it's just in WWE to really get over, as we saw in 2000 when we've been watching like Chris Benoit and Perry Saturn and Dean Malenko, you need to have the character to really have longevity. So I hope that there's no better time than the present to show it, so hopefully he does.
Yeah, I mean, very much like the Timothy Thatcher. It's the Timothy Thatcher on NXT. I mean, the guy's tremendous in the ring, no doubt about it, but there's just, it's charisma bypass territory. I mean, it's like his promos are as dull as ditch water, and he's just not an interesting person. So, I mean, and that there in the entire WWE system, you've got to have that, you know, X factor. You've got to have that pizzazz. You've got to have that personality. You've got to have something else. You know, it can't just be the in-ring. And if it is, unless the company is really in love with you, you're probably not going to make it. So, but you're right about Apollo Crews. This is the time for him to really show the people in charge that he has got more than they think he has, and that this should be perhaps not, you know, should be not a 2 or 3 week thing, but perhaps like a 2 or 3 month relationship with the title. But I mean, it's, I don't know whether he can do that, but I hope he can. You know, I really hope he can impress the right people.
The show kicked off with a riot. Kevin Owens hosting a KO show with the challenge, the three women who were going to be facing off to determine who faces Asuka at Backlash. So we obviously had Charlotte Flair, Natalia, and Nia Jax. And Asuka was out there as well. She was great. She was just on top form. Which led us to later on in the show, that triple threat match between Nia Jax, Natalia, and Charlotte Flair. Now, I know that you were particularly frustrated at an aspect of this. Obviously, we saw Nia Jax get the win over Natalia here, but you were not pleased at the choices here for number one contender.
Well, I thought it was quite funny that Natalia, when she came out for the Kevin Owens show, she was forced to apologise for behaving like a brat last week. So I thought that was really funny. And then she was interviewed backstage, wasn't she? And as she was being interviewed, she received a call from TJ, her husband, Tyson. And this was one of the crappest pieces of acting I think Natalia, the bad get much lower.
She just keeps topping herself with bad acting, right?
Oh, it was just atrocious. So she's on the phone to TJ, who's apparently telling her off and advising her on things that she should and shouldn't be doing. But there's no realism at all, because Natalia's not giving, you know, I say it actually is a conversation that's taking place. You know, TJ would have to have time to actually say words, and then she would have to have time to react to those words and then respond. And there was no time at all for him to be able to get a word in edgeways. So the whole thing was ludicrous. So then she has this resistant phone conversation with TJ. I mean, what's she doing with a telephone, Kenny? I mean, you know, when she's being interviewed on Raw. So then after this non-conversation's taken place, this, and she's even more annoyed and irritated. She then goes to finish the interview, only to be told that the time's run out. And Samoa Joe admonishes her again for being unprofessional. It's just absolutely mad. And then we had this match, as you said, which was to determine Asuka's challenger at Backlash. So that was Charlotte Flair versus Nia Jax versus Natalya. Why was Natalya in this match after she had lost on two consecutive episodes of Raw to Shayna Baszler? And as someone has also pointed out, I think she lost to Liv Morgan on Main Event. So she's just basically on this run of losses, and yet she gets installed in this high-stakes match. Well, of course she was in the match to do the job, but it just sort of undid, you know, it just rendered pointless the matches with Baszler, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're doing it because they want to keep them apart, but you'd think you could come up with a better reason as to why, you know. I mean, the thing, Natalya, and it's got to be a rib now, right? The storyline is happening. I mean, I do think Asuka and Nia Jax has got the potential to be a good match at the pay-per-view, so I'm glad that she won. I thought the match was decent enough.
I enjoyed the match. Also, I think Charlotte Flair being in it really devalued, and somebody pointed this out on Facebook. I'm sorry, I can't remember the person's name, that Charlotte Flair as NXT champion, why was she in this match?
Yeah, she really needed to put across, you know, does she want to be a double champ? You know, just, you know, having two titles gives me more money. I can get to work bigger. You know, tell us why that second title would mean something to you.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like this is the fact that wasn't stressed before the match greatly devalues the NXT women's title, because as the Raw women's title, which I guess technically isn't, but that's not a message that WWE should be communicating via its programming as its storyline. And the fact that Charlotte is NXT champion, and because she's the queen and she's the best wrestler, and you know, I think she probably is the best wrestler, best female wrestler, at least in WWE. Her as champion, I think, automatically elevates that title. So she should never have been part of this match. I mean, in fact, it should have been Shayna Baszler versus Nia Jax versus Natalya. I think that would have made more sense.
Elsewhere on Raw, we had tons of other stuff on the show. I do want to give a quick shout out to Edge. I thought his promo backstage was really good, where he was, you know, giving parallels to The Undertaker and knowing when to hang up and how he's going to try and come back. I mean, the fact that for Backlash they've got the theme tune to The Greatest Showman for the pay-per-view as the theme tune cracks me up. Like, it's got to be a way to troll people. Like, it's just, at this point, it has to be. But I thought his promo here was really good. You know, the whole idea that he's been away for so long, and now Orton's trying to, you know, expose the fact that he's been away for so long because he couldn't hang in a proper wrestling match. I think there's a decent story there. I would prefer if the greatest match ever tagline was taken away, but I thought his promo was very good.
Yeah, I mean, Edge said, you know, I have hung hold for hold and toe-to-toe with The Undertaker, with Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, Eddie Mysterio, Christian, William Regal, Owen Hart, Mr. Perfect, Davey Boy Smith. The list goes on and on. Obviously, he said this a lot slower. Every style I adapted was my job. I pulled people up to my level. I taught guys how to get to the next level because that was part of my job and I was damn good at it. How, you know, he used to be great but didn't know if he still was. And he closed by saying, I'm going to dig to the very depths of my soul. It's all a man can do. So, I mean, yeah, I think the tone of it was a lot different. I mean, I didn't like his appearance. Was it? I think it was the previous week where he was out there ranting like a madman. I just found that irritating, Kenny. And for a babyface, the way he's behaving, it just discredited all his babyface qualifications, the way he behaved. So, I mean, this was, you know, definitely far more fitting and appropriate for his character and for this match as well. I did think it was quite funny that he didn't really mention anything about it being the greatest wrestling match ever. That was not something that was really the thrust of his promo, did
he? No, he's not said one word about that. So
it just all feels like they're having a laugh at everyone's expense, basically. It did amuse me that later on we had Ric Flair sent in a video. He was draped in gold. I mean, what's Nate compensating for there, Kenny? vulgar displays of wealth, you know. and then Rick backed Randy Orton. So I thought that was, I did enjoy Flair's little contribution to the feud. So I thought that, I was amused by that.
We should mention that obviously Rey Mysterio was not on this week's show after what happened to him last week, but we did have Seth Rollins all over the place. He was talking about what happened to Rey, and he doesn't know what Rey's future holds, but you know, if that was his fight, he was talking about how if last week was his final act, then you know that's a valiant thing to have. And basically next week we're going to get a retirement ceremony for Rey Mysterio hosted by Seth Rollins. I can only assume shenanigans, Finn.
Yes, I mean, we don't need another one of these Rey Mysterio retirements, do we? I mean, he was going to retire, was it last year, and he's son Dominic talked him out of it. Do you remember that?
That involved the Rey and Lesnar and Dominic stuff. So I'll give that one a pass because it was very good. But unfortunately, Rollins is the one involved in this one. He's just dull as dishwater.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. This is. I just think that they should have made that a little bit clearer, and they should have said that it was Seth Rollins who was going to be hosting this. And that Seth Rollins tells us that Rey Mysterio, there'll be a retirement ceremony for Rey Mysterio next week. They didn't mention that, did they? It was just a graphic on screen.
They mentioned the graphic on screen on the show about the retirement ceremony. It was later on Twitter where they confirmed that Rollins is hosting it.
All right, okay. All right, so now we have to go on Twitter. You know, that's part of it. So in order... we watch Raw, but then we've got on Twitter as well to get these other details. To make sense of it. You know, and I know a lot of people do that, but you shouldn't have to do that. It should be self-contained. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It'll all be explained next week. So, yeah, I mean, it's presumably Rey Mysterio will return next week, do a run-in, attack Rollins, and that'll set up a match between them at Backlash. It's obviously where this is heading.
Yeah, and it should be the match should be very good. We also got an MVP lounge, VIP lounge with Drew McIntyre, and you know, MVP was basically trying to rile him up. Yeah. MVP's, you know, saying the last time you were out here, I offered you to give you guidance, and you ended up giving me a claymore kick, and then he said that he had two thoughts after taking the claymore kick: one, that Drew would become the champ, and two, that MVP would make sure that he plays a part in McIntyre losing the belt. Lashley's waited 9 years for a title match, and then Drew said he waited 19 years to get his moment. And then Lashley ends up coming out, and MVP introduced him, but then there was a claymore kick from Drew, and you know, then he's trying to hold Lashley back, and McIntyre's begging him to come in the ring. So you would think that was it, but then of course at the end of the night, after we saw the Street Profits against Bobby Lashley and MVP, which was the main event.
Yeah.
That match goes to a DQ finish because Lashley had, I think it was Montez Ford in the full Nelson, but he wouldn't release the hold.
That's right.
So the referee DQ'd him. And then after the match, Drew came out, and Drew and Lashley had this big fight, and trainees are coming in, they're getting taken out, and McIntyre's getting speared by Lashley, and I thought this brawl to end the show was really good, and I think Drew and Lashley's is feeling like a big match.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot actually to chew over here. I mean, we backstage earlier, you know, Lana had said to MVP, we need to talk. And MVP had said to Lana, oh, no, we don't. Then, you know, MVP did the VIP lounge, as you say, introduced Drew McIntyre. McIntyre ended up nailing him with a claymore. Lashley came out, and Drew's begging Lashley to fight him, and thinks better of it, and ends up leaving with MVP. And then backstage, Lana turned up again with a bag of ice, and she's, you know, as an olive branch to MVP, hands him the ice, you know, for his face to ice down the bruising that doesn't actually exist from the kick. And then MVP basically, you know, to hell with you, gives him the ice back, and Lana has another meltdown, Kenny. It's another award-winning acting performance from Lana.
Do you know the thing is that, like, Drew and Lashley are really putting in some big fight feel work here, which is really good. And the last thing they need is Lana involved. Get her out of this picture.
Yeah.
She is not what this needs, because MVP, you know, he set a very kind of clear directive here that, you know, you Claymore kicked me when I tried to help you. I knew right then and there you were going to win the title, but I also knew I'd be the one to help take you down. I've got Lashley. You know, he basically, you know, has used the fact that Lashley's not at his title shot. He's now behind him. There's a really good story there. And
yeah.
I just don't think Lana should come in and ruin it.
No, I mean, at least they are actually telling the story here and writing, presumably writing Lana out here.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether she's going to be in the finish of the match at Backlash. Maybe that will be a final appearance. It seems like this is going to be it for her. There's not really any reason for her after this. So, I mean, they are keeping that going. And, you know, we've criticized WWE many times in the past for just dropping storylines and not seeing them. So, I mean, at least they are trying to write this one out logically. I mean, it does make sense that Lana would want to still be associated with Lashley. They are, in the storyline, married. You know, she's upset that MVP has muscled in. You know, and he's more competent than she is. And MVP that's put Lashley on this path to the title, which Lana couldn't do. So she's resentful of MVP. So there's a lot of things going on here.
So just to interrupt, so what I mean by her ruining it is that I think it's good they're telling the story, as you've mentioned, but yeah. I just hope that I don't really want to see her involved in the match. Because
no.
I don't think that... I mean, well, do you know, I'll take that back. There's a way you can book her in the match which is clever. I just don't want to see her out there screaming.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, Lana... I mean, it's a long time since she's really been an asset to this program. I mean, I think she was during that wedding stuff, but that was just because it was absurd. I mean, when it comes to serious stuff that's involving the title, she doesn't really have a place in that picture to me. So I'm totally with you there. I think MVP has been really good for Lashley. I think he's been tremendous since he's returned. I think he's been an important part of the puzzle for Lashley. I think he's somebody that can do a lot for this company. When he returned, I think it was Royal Rumble, he came back. I really didn't rate his comeback performance, but he's absolutely proven himself in not all, but most of his performances since. I mean, he's there to put others over. You know, that is clearly his goal, and he does that basically every time. But you're right about Lana. She's there. It's like, it's just over the top. It's not main event quality caliber performances. She really, I think really they're getting to the point now where maybe next week they just need to write her out the storyline, because Lana was there trying to convince Lashley not to leave with MVP, and Lashley didn't even think about it. He realizes his future's with MVP and that Lana is a liability to his career, and he left with MVP. So I think what we need next week maybe is for Lashley just to say to Lana, you know, I'm sorry, it's over. MVP is the guy who's going to do more for me than you could. We're through. And then Lana can have a last meltdown and just, we can see her leaving via the exit.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
That would make your week, wouldn't it, Kenny?
Look, she'd get start of the week from me. Yeah, I do also want to say, and I'm not just saying this because of the what people will perceive as a bias, I think Drew has done a really good job as champion. And I think if you compare him with a coronavirus and an empty arena, I think he's done a better job than either Kofi or Seth did coming out of WrestleMania last year. I think he's connected more. I think he's found a way to kind of use this situation to his advantage. So I hope that he can keep that up, because if he keeps that up, by the time we do get back to having people in the arenas, hopefully maybe September or have smaller venues or whatever, I think that people will respect that he's been able to do what he's done so far. So I'm hopeful that they can keep that little bit of momentum going, and having him kind of show, you know, he can be quite funny, he can be a badass, he's got various sides to him. So I think that the fact that him and Lashley feels like a big deal is a compliment to Drew and what he's done since WrestleMania.
Yeah, I agree. I think he did well this week. I think there've been weeks when he's done better than other weeks, but I thought this week he had to do a lot, and it all made sense, it all connected, it all meshed. And it all in the end, it did make sense that it would have this pull apart with the NXT talent coming in to separate them, and which they did eventually when the numbers the ring. There's so many people in the ring in the end pulling them apart. So, I mean, I think they've done a good job building up this match. I think Drew has been a bigger part of it than Lashley has. But I think Lashley can do... I think Lashley's got a lot more to show us. He's got a lot more to give to this company than we've seen from him so far. And now is the time for him to show it. But yeah, I've talked about... I've urged WWE to present this match for a long time. They're doing it now. And I think they've made a really good job of it so far. And I'm looking forward to the match. I'm hoping it's not just a one pay-per-view match series. I'm hoping that there's at least going to be two matches.
Yeah, 100%. So that was Raw. Again, more fun stuff. We should just mention
Street Profits and Viking Raiders played golf this week.
And the Viking Raiders looking a little bit more like, who is it you called them?
The Highlanders.
I mean, nothing wrong with that, Finn. Nothing wrong with showing a bit of Scottish, you know, togs.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't realise they were Scottish, the Viking Raiders.
Well, you know, Viking, Scottish, all makes sense.
Well, it's all the same place, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Scotland, Ireland, it's all the same thing. Yeah, that was fun. Again, you know, you go back to the Viking Raiders, they've not really felt like they've worked for a long time, and then all of a sudden they're doing these wacky skits, and they kind of feel like they work now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're sending themselves up. It seems to me that everyone's having a good time doing this. I'm not quite sure where it's going to lead, presumably to a match, backlash, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping that if they're going to have another match, I hope it's going to be some type of cinematic experience rather than a straight straight tag match, because we saw a few weeks ago on Raw and it was stupendously dull. I don't need to see it again. So if they're going to have a match, it needs to be something ridiculous. I'm totally on board for that.
Yeah, 100%. So, Finn, we are going to leave. We'll be doing an overrun where we'll talk a little bit about an old issue of Power Slam. I'm also going to ask you a little bit about a comment that Drew McIntyre made in the media this week regarding The Undertaker. But what are your plugs this week?
Well, none really. Well, just my Twitter at Finlay Martin. Obviously, I've got the three books. People know about that, but yeah, not really anything to plug, Kenny. How about yourself?
Well, you can get more content from us on Patreon, which really helps support us genuinely. Well, we can't do any live events. That's patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can get this podcast a day early. You can get a overrun that we do. There's pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, articles from Finn, other podcasts covering retro shows. So it's a good time over there. Please join us. And then also just if you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel, if you're not one of the 100 and, oh my God, how many people is it now? If you are not one of the 154,576 people, then join us at youtube.com/insidetheropes for interview content. Lots of AEW stuff from over the weekend. There's a Bret Hart clip going up later this week, so loads of stuff over there too. It's fine. I hope that you enjoy your week, whatever you're getting up to. There's an easing of the lockdown rule, so maybe we're going to see you out having a picnic or something.
yeah, June 1st. Apparently things are going to change next week. I don't know how much they're really going to change, but no, I'm going to be full on this week doing my WrestleTalk stuff. And I do apologise that my latest instalment of What's Going Down has not been written yet because I have been doing my WrestleTalk duties, but I will promise you faithfully that it will be done next week. So, I will enjoy myself this weekend. I hope you do as well. And I hope everyone listening does also.
Indeed. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.